I saw on the bulletin board that the topic they tried to force on me was Pesach and you. We'll get to Pesach at the end, and you will talk about whatever myself. In general, if you look in the world can be broken up into two different types of people. There are certain people that are basically on-time people. They're, everywhere they go, they'll be on time, they'll be early, like more or less anyone here, more or less. On the other hand, you have certain people that are always coming late, huffing and puffing, running in, sometimes missing the boat, usually not. And the difference is that the first group, people that are always punctual, are usually people that are controlled by their minds, by their brains, by their intellect, by their seichel. Whereas the second group are people that are more emotional. Which is better? Well, it's hard to say. The truth is, each has a plus. A person that lets his mind control him will usually be very goal-oriented because he knows what he's doing, he'll be organized, he's likely to be successful. Of course, he'll have siyata dishmaya in that. He knows what he wants. It's defined. On the other hand, sometimes when people are totally controlled by their mind, they don't have any feelings, any regish. They're not able to soak up a nice atmosphere, to feel good about something. They're not always merciful. The second group, on the other hand, the emotional group, is able to, they seem to enjoy life to a certain extent a little more. They seem to take in nice experiences. They're relaxed. Everything, they take it easy, except to the last minute when they're running and huffing and puffing. But other than that, everything's easy going. The advantage is a lot of times, if you don't have a defined goal, where are you getting? How are you going to succeed? It's not always good. It's not always good to be late. I remember I once heard a story. I heard this firsthand. I don't know if you know, you must have heard of the name Gross. Does the name Gross ring a bell? What do you know about Gross?
It's a cola,
but it's named after the late Joseph Gross. His memory should be blessed. He was a person, not only is a YU cola named after him, but there are tens, maybe hundreds of institutions that were blessed to get his generous donations. In Israel and in America, I'm not talking about hundreds or thousands, but maybe millions of dollars. Joseph Gross was a friend of my Rosh Yeshiva of Horowitz. He should live and be well. He's a Rosh Yeshiva of BMT. He was a special person. He's a special person himself. He was drafted by the Green Bay Packers when he was in high school and refused to play because of Shabbos. He was drafted by the Packers. No minor league, straight to, he didn't want to play. But anyway, he got to know Joseph Gross very well. And once a year, Joseph Gross, who was, I would say, pretty traditional, I don't know his religious level, it doesn't matter, we don't judge people, he used to come to Israel on his, I think on the yard side of one of his relatives. I remember one time it was his wife, he outlived his wife, maybe it could be his parents, that I don't know, his parents maybe not, but I remember I used to get in the car with Rav Horowitz and we drive Joseph Gross and try to get a minyan together to say Tehillim on the yard side. I heard this story firsthand that Joseph Gross, someone had set up a meeting with him. And this was a multi-million dollar meeting where he was to donate a certain amount of money to someone who was nudging him. And he told him, show up at the hotel at 2 o'clock where I'm staying and we'll meet. Sure enough, the guy who was out to meet him left where he was, left at 1 o'clock. It was a subway across the city, whatever it was, a bus across the city. He showed up at 2:10. Ran up to the room, knocked, no answer. Went down to the desk, where is Joseph Gross? Said, oh, we checked out 5 minutes ago. He got a message later from Joseph Gross. I was waiting for you at 2 o'clock. You weren't there, I had to leave. 2:05, he left. The guy never met Joseph Gross. The meeting never came to being. He lost down on a few million dollars. That was it. And Joseph Gross told over the story himself. For whatever reason, it didn't work out. So Sometimes when a person's late, you know, you miss a few minutes, but you never know. Being late is not so pleasant. The best thing is that a person mixes a little bit of his emotions with his mind. Gets the best of both. That will be able to take up, soak up the atmosphere, feel good, and yet be goal-oriented and accomplish a lot. But if it's one or the other, you should know, to be successful, a person should have both. But says the Orchos Tzadikim, you heard of the Sefer Orchos Tzadikim?
Yeah.
Successful people are people that put their minds above their heart, the minds above their feelings. In life, we have to work with feelings. We have to feel sorry for a poor person. But there are guidelines on how to get stuck. There are halakhos. You see a poor guy, I'm not talking about a beggar sitting on the street, but you see a poor guy who you know needs money, you're walking past him, your heart bleeds for him. Here at Mosh, here's the money. You don't realize this guy doesn't want stuck in public, you're embarrassing him. There's a halakha about that. Not to embarrass a poor person. You can't just go by your feelings. A person has to put his mind above his feelings. Work with his regesh, with his emotions, but put his mind above. His mind has to be the driver's seat. And in that way, a person will be successful. Why do we mention this? Parshas Pekudei, Parshas HaShavua, Vayakel Pekudei. Parshas Pekudei, the Eilef Pekudei HaMishkan. This is, how do we translate the word Pekudei? Maybe an account. This was an account. The psukim start going into details on the amounts of materials, the exact amounts of materials, seemingly totally irrelevant, who cares, that were donated to the Mishkan. Who cares? I saw a very, very interesting idea. I don't remember who says this. I saw it in a Sefer once. Beautiful idea. Why the total went into account of all of the materials. And that is as follows. We know that according to some of the Rishonim, the Mishkan was kapala for what sin? For the Cheda Egel. After what was the Cheda Egel? The Jews needed some kind of physical, they needed some kind of physical symbol. If it wasn't Avodah Zarah altogether, they needed some kind of physical symbol. If Moshe disappeared, they needed something else to clutch on to. And they got a little silly. They made this ridiculous image. That was wrong. The Mishkan was kapava for the Egel. What was the Mishkan? The Mishkan was also a physical symbol. It was sort of like a condensation. It was a place where the Shekhinah would be. But of course, the Shekhinah is everywhere. The Mishkan was not Avodah Zarah. Even though in the Mishkan also there was something that would seem a little bit controversial. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? What was in the Mishkan that might seem to be What?
The Aron.
Not the Aron, on top. What was on top?
The
Kruvim. It's spoken about the Kruvim. Why it wasn't a Avodah Zarah? Of course, Hashem commanded to do it. But in any case, the Mishkan was kapala for the Cheder Egel. But there's another element to it, besides what we just said. The Cheder Egel, if you look into the Cheder Egel, the way the Psukim describe it, you know what went on there? It was a flood of emotions. The Jews were tossing their jewelry. They were tossing their jewelry into the fire. They were dancing around it, almost like a scene from a movie, maybe a cult scene. Just a total flood of emotions. Just losing themselves, not realizing, not stopping to think rationally. What are we doing? Just going after their emotions completely. On the other hand, the Mishkan was the opposite. The Mishkan, everything with an account, straight seichel, every detail outlined, everything was with an account. And that was why the Mishkan was a kapava for the cheda ego. The mind went over the feelings. The Mishkan went over the cheda ego. Okay, that was another idea, Parshat Pekudei, about that. You should realize that the desire for Avodah Zarah, although it might seem silly to us today, Chazal tell us that there was a tremendous lust for idolatry. There was a tremendous lust that we can't relate to. The only way we can relate to it today is if you think of something else that we have a lust for. There are certain lusts that people have today. I have to go into that. People had that for Avodah Zarah as well. People had a certain lust for that. We know that Anshei Knesset HaGdolot did a certain ceremony. The Gemara describes how they nullified the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. There used to be a real Yetzirah for them, a lust for them. As a matter of fact, there's a Gemara that tells us that There are a number of kings, the Mishnah says in Masechta Sanhedrin, there are a number of kings that don't have a chelek in Olam Haba. One of them is Menasheh. Menasheh, tragically, was the son of a big, big tzaddik. His name was Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Perhaps, if not the most, one of the most righteous kings to ever live. Not only was he so righteous himself, but the whole generation was a righteous generation. They all knew the Torah backwards and forwards. Dinei Tumah and Tala. Everybody lived and followed the Torah, more or less. But Chizkiyahu had one son that went off the path, and his name was Menasheh. And Chazal tell us Menasheh is one of the three kings that don't have a chelik in Olam Haba. And the Gemara tells us that Rav Ashi was Dovish, wanted to be Dovish about these kings, including Menasheh. And Menasheh appeared to Rav Ashi. Of course, Menasheh passed away already. He doesn't have a chelik in him. He appeared to Rav Ashi in a dream and said, you're being Dovish, you're talking to me like I'm one of your friends or something. You know, you don't have respect for me. Talking like one of the friends that aren't going to go Olam Haba. I have a question in Halacha for you. He asked him a certain question, an interesting question in Halacha about cutting bread, where you cut it. Rav Ashi himself didn't know. Later on, this Halacha, Menasheh told him, it's a Halacha that appears in the Shulchan Aruch later on. Appears today in the Shulchan Aruch. You have to cut the bread in the place where it's baked the most. Menasheh told Chizkiyahu in the dream, you don't even know this Halacha. And you're talking about me like I'm one of the boys, one of the guys that don't have Olam Haba. Anyway, Menasheh then was asked by Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi asked him, well, if you're such a Talmud Chacham, I have a question for you. How was it that you went after Avodah Zarah so freely? So, very powerful answer. Menasheh answered, Rav Ashi, this is all in a dream. Menasheh lived much earlier, right? Menasheh lived during the times of the kings, the Malachim. Rav Ashi was in Amora. Menasheh answered Rav Ashi, you should know, you're asking me how I went after idols. Had you been living in my generation, you know what you would have done? You would have been picking up your garment in order to run. You would have ran, you would have been my prize student. You would have run after, you would have ran after me. You would have ran after idols. Like, you would be running after it more than I would be. That's how powerful the lust was. They got rid of it, but that's how powerful the lust was. And we can understand that sometimes a flood of emotions makes a person lose himself. Any
guess? How
did they get rid of it? The Gemara says they caught it in some physical manner. It's not really physical, but they threw it into a pot. They boiled it out. They did some kind of Kabbalistic ritual, we could call it, maybe. Okay, they got rid of it. The Gemara says they wanted to get rid of the lust for adultery also, for sexual prohibitions, and then they saw that the world, people wouldn't want to have children if they got rid of that. So they let up a little. In any case. That was the idea, how strong the lust for Avodah Zarah is. And Pekudei teaches us that there's an account for everything. Make an account for everything, put that above your lusts, and that'll bring you kapara, then you'll be successful. You know, how far can emotions take a person if he loses himself? I'll tell you a quick story. This is not such a nice story, but I'll tell you anyway. Like if you're tired, I don't know if you'll enjoy it or not, but it's a very powerful story. When I came to Israel 32 years ago, I had a friend from Queens, one of the guys just like us, went to a yeshiva high school. This guy was the nicest guy in the world, probably the nicest guy. Maybe Rav Machlis is nicer, I don't know. Maybe he's even nicer than Rav Machlis, I don't know. I don't know if I could say such a thing. But in any case, this was the nicest guy in the world, the nicest guy. He would help anybody, he talked with a smile. I can't tell you, I can't attest for his religious level, I can't tell you, he wore a kippah. What he did, I don't know. But he's a super nice guy. He would help you, he talked so nicely, he just stood out. Went to a kibbutz, I went to the kibbutz with him. I noticed that he had a little bit of a drug habit. He used to smoke a little. After the summer, I went back to yeshiva to learn, and bounced around from kibbutz to another kibbutz. He may have been yeshiva a little bit. A few years later, I went back to the kibbutz. I used to visit him every now and then. I went to visit him on the kibbutz, and the guy in charge in the kibbutz over there called me over to the side. He told me, you know, this guy, Leslie, that was his name, it doesn't matter, he's not here anymore on the kibbutz. He was in Yerushalayim. He bought drugs from an undercover police in Yerushalayim. He was set up and got arrested. You know, it's an embarrassment for the kibbutz, of course, one of the volunteers here. tell me where he is. I went to visit him in the prison in Yerushalayim. It's called the Russian compound. I don't know if you ever heard of it. There's a prison there. They still have it today. And sure enough, he had a trial. I was a character witness for him at the trial. This guy, it was heroin that he bought. He actually wasn't buying, he actually sold it. He sold heroin to an undercover police officer. He was facing up to 15 years in prison. Luckily, Baruch Hashem, he had a decent lawyer. I tried to help him in court a little. I promised that I'll make sure he never does anything again. I don't know how much the judge believed it or not. He was lucky. He got a one-year sentence. I used to visit him on Shabbos. I walked, then they transferred him to Ramla, to a much bigger prison out of Yerushalayim. I went to visit him once. I found out 4 months later he was out. I don't know, maybe they paid something. I don't know what happened. He got out of jail 4 months later. He went back to America. He was still the same nice guy. It was hard to believe this is the nice guy. A year later, they told me that this guy was arrested again. What was he doing? He broke into an older elderly couple's house to get money, I guess to support his habit. They didn't give him the money. They resisted a little. He took a club and he bashed both of them on the head, broke their skulls. One of them was in a coma. I don't know. This is a nice guy. But he had after his emotions. He couldn't control it. He let his emotions get the best of him. A person takes drugs, he loses his ability to think. His emotions could kill him. Why do I mention all of this? I'll tell you why. You guys are going to be going to Chutzlavet soon. Some of you guys are going next week to Poland. Some of you are going to America for Pesach. By the way, I think it's much better to go to Poland, to spend a year in Poland. If you're thinking of going to Chutzlavet for an extended time, you'd be better off in Poland. There are less distractions there than America. I think you'd be better off there, okay? Might be more anti-Semitism, but I don't know. But in any case, you're better off. Anyway, you guys are going back to America. You should know, it could be that in America, the lusts for Avodah Zarah don't exist. Maybe the lusts that I just described don't exist, but there are other lusts in America. And it's very, very important when you're there, very important to identify what they are, and to know how to stand up to them. I'm talking about not only on Pesach, I'm talking about if you're going to be there next year, whenever it is. There are a lot of things in America that exist that don't exist here. Or they exist here, but they're much bigger. They're much bigger in America. There's much more money, there's much more freedom. Very distracting. And we don't have to go into what it is, but it's very obvious. The TV alone, the computer, everything. You can get everything on the internet, it's true, but the distractions are much bigger there. I'm going to give you a few pieces of advice, and we'll mention an idea on Pesach as well. And that is as follows. One, this is could be for the rest of your lives. It could be while you're here too, but especially there. In America, you're going to once again see your friends who you haven't been with. Some of them haven't been fortunate enough to come to Israel for 2 years or 1 year. You're going to see the difference between you and them. You don't notice how much you've changed. It's like a person, when you grow, you're obviously not the same size you were at your bar mitzvah. But did you ever notice that you grew? No. I look at a picture now of myself when I was 13. I see I was a little kid. But much younger. I look much younger then than I do now. When you're growing, you don't notice it. You guys grew a lot, Baruch Hashem, this year. You didn't notice it because it was a little. You go back and you see your friends that remained where they were when they left off. Where you left off with them, you see there's a big difference. And sometimes there's a little bit of peer pressure as well. What should you do? Avoid meeting them? Turn your backs on them? Of course not. You have to be nice to them. You don't want to turn them off. You have to be careful for you. You have to be strong. One thing, the most important thing, is to learn Torah every morning. Something substantial. Every morning and every night. Every morning and every night. When you wake up, and before you go to sleep. When you wake up, by the way, it doesn't have to be before davening. It would be good if you can. But before you eat breakfast, before you go and eat, before you do anything, learn. And at night, the last thing you do before you go to sleep, plan out your day. If you're planning to come back late at night, come back 10 minutes earlier, 15 minutes early, and sit and learn. And if your beginning and end of each day is with Torah, whatever goes on in the middle, somehow or another will work itself out. You'll feel Kedusha with you the entire day. The best thing you could do is to get up a little early. That's really the best thing. What is early? Well, you know, early for some people is 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, if you learn with Hari, so you get up very early. But I'll tell you the truth. Getting up early, each person on his level, I'll tell you the truth, getting up early could be 8:30. If you were planning to get up at 9, so get up at 8:30, that's early also. You're going to daven with a Chabad minion, whatever, at 9 o'clock, okay? So don't show up at 9 and start flinging on your tefillin. And I mean, if you come to a movie late, if you come to a movie as it starts, it's not the same thing as coming 5 minutes before, 10 minutes before, sitting in the seat, composing yourself, getting ready, thinking. Enjoy the movie much more. Same thing is true with davening. If you prepare yourself before davening early in the morning, you feel much better towards it. The best way to prepare yourself is come sometime before, put your tefillin on, sit and learn for 15 minutes. So if the minyan's at 9 o'clock, don't show up at 9:05. And don't show up at 9. Show up at 8:30. You have plenty of time. Put your tefillin on, sit and learn something. Your davening will be different and your day will be different. And I'm not telling you how much time it could be. It could be a lot of time, it could be a little time. But just know, if you start the morning with learning and you end the day with learning, your day's going to be much better. That's one thing. Second thing is that you have to realize that there's a difference. One of the big differences between Jews and Goyim is the Jewish day. When does the Jewish day begin? When does it really begin? At night, beginning of the Chumash. By a guy, it's the opposite. By a guy, when does the day end? At night. It begins with a day. What do you have to look forward to as a guy? Darkness. The night. You look forward to going to sleep. You can't stand the day. I'm looking forward to sleeping. I can't stand my job. I'm looking forward to the weekend. I can't. What do you have to look forward to? A Jew, on the other hand, the idea is that we start off with darkness. We look forward to the great light. We look forward to things getting bigger and better. We have bitachon in Hashem. Olam haba, a person dies, but we have something to live for. We have something to look forward to. Not that I'm looking forward. My goal in life is to get old and die and put my head on the pillow to go to sleep tonight. That's not a goal. That's very depressing. We have something that we're living for. We have something eternal. Olam haba. If we think of that, and you look around, you look at how many gayim there are in Poland and in America. You take a look around and you see that there are millions and millions of gayim. Millions. The chances of me being born Jewish, you know what the chances of me being born Jewish was? What was the chance of me being born Jewish? You should know, for every one Jew in the world, there's approximately 150 gayim. 150 gayim. That means the chances of you being born as a guy was much more likely. Not twice, and not 3 times, and not 10 times, and not 50 times. Much more. That means if you were born Jewish, it wasn't an accident. You could have much more likely been born as a guy in America, or as a guy in the Philippines, or as a guy in India, or in Vietnam. Much more likely. And then you would never come to Leva Torah, I can promise you that. You'd be working in some rice field in China. You'd be in America. One more China man in the world. Very nice. Shunabed. What? Shunabed in the rice fields. Okay. I'm not knocking it. God forbid. If God made them, everyone has a purpose. But you realize that there's something much more meaningful. And if Hashem made us as Jews, it pays to stop and think for a minute what we're doing as Jews, what we can do. A guy, there are plenty of guys that believe in God as well. The difference is that guys turn to God when they need God. When they don't need God, a Jew, what does a Jew do? A Jewish person constantly tries to live a life of Avodas Hashem. Not only when I need Hashem. All the time. All the time. I try to serve God all the time. I make a bracha before I eat, it's true. I want the food. But you know what? The bracha that's the raisa is after I finish the food. I don't need God anymore. I finished the bench. I want to relate to God even when I seemingly don't need Him. We relate to God all the time. There's a pasuk that we say at the end of Ashrei, Karov Hashem l'chol karov, l'chol asher yikruhu v'emes. What is the pasuk? What's called Karov Hashem l'chol karov? What does that mean? Hashem is close to who?
All those that call out to Him.
Okay, right. All those that call. And then it goes on and says, l'chol asher yikruhu v'emes. All those that call out to God in truth. There's two parts of the pasuk. One part is Hashem's close to all those that call out. But then it says to all those that call out in truth. What's the difference? So there are two groups. There's a group that calls out. They call out. When they're in trouble, they call out to God. But there's a group that calls out to God in truth. Not just when it's in trouble. A person that calls out to God in truth is a person that calls out all the time. Not just when he has trouble. When things are going well, it says, "Hi God, you know, thank you for what you gave me today." Or, "Hi God, you know what, Hashem, I'm bored today. Hashem, I'm embarrassed." Discusses his feelings with Hashem. He talks to Hashem all the time. He's living constantly with God. That's a person that calls out to God in truth. Hashem's close to anyone. A person that calls out to God in trouble, that's also good. It's much better than nothing. There are people that don't do that either. But a person that calls out to Hashem in truth, it's a person that always, constantly tries to relate to God. And we, as Jewish people, can constantly do that. We can talk to God whenever we want. Some of you guys, who's going to Poland next week by a show of hands? About five guys. But some of you guys, whether going to Poland, some who went last year by a show of hands? Okay. So I'd say about a third of this group is gone. In any case, you guys are going to go to the Kever. Well, today was a very big yard site. You know what I'm talking about? What a yard site it is. Rabbi Elimelech from Lizensk. You're going to go to a Kever of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. I think they're taking you there. I've been there a few times. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov was very, very known for instituting an idea, which was not something new. It's an idea that Avraham Avinu did also, and Yitzchak and Yaakov, and plenty of people did before, and it's mentioned not only by Hasidim, it's mentioned even in by the Chafetz Chaim in the Mishnah Berurah, mentioned in the Bi'ah Halacha, the idea of a person talking to God, called Hisbodedus, just being alone and talking to God. It would be very nice for a person to be able to talk to God all day, but it's hard to do. But if a person takes a few minutes every day, besides davening three times a day, a person can daven three times a day and not even think of God. You know what I'm talking about? Just daven by habit. But if a person takes 5 minutes every day, talk to God. In these 5 minutes, I'm dedicating to God, irregardless of whatever else I do. It could be that I learn a good part of the day. It could be that I daven, but sometimes I forget God, even when I learn. I'm talking to God. I'm giving myself to God for 5 minutes. You'll feel much, 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 much holier. You'll feel much, much stronger. You'll feel good about yourself. And therefore, how much time do we have left? Almost finished. Okay, there's an idea that a Jew should be happy. We should be happy that we're Jewish. We should be thankful that we're Jewish. And realize what it means to be Jewish. To be Jewish means to act Jewish. To not to be embarrassed. As Shulchan Aruch says at the very beginning, a person shouldn't be embarrassed about people that laugh at him. Be proud. I'll tell you a quick story. I remember, I was a kid in high school. I didn't do everything properly. I remember, after I came back from my year in Israel, I was, you know, Baruch Hashem, I was making sure to wash and bench with kafan. I remember I was sitting with a few friends, me and another guy. We were sitting with a few friends that didn't go to Israel. We went, we had falafel or something in one of the stores in America. And after we finished, my friends, of course, we didn't come, they just quickly, like, we're getting up to leave, no benching, nothing. Put me and my other friend, we pulled that bench. Suddenly the friends start laughing at us. "What are you doing? Come on, let's go, we're ready. What happened to you? Let's go." I said, "Hold on. Let's go." I remember I almost got up to leave also. It was very strong, the pressure. And then for a second, I gripped myself and said, "What am I doing? I got a bench. Of course I have to bench." I sat down. I made sure to sit down, my friend. We sat down and we benched and we made them wait for us. And then afterwards, they came over and they said, "You know, we really respect what you did." And they benched also. It was maybe a little too late, but they benched also. They felt it was, you know, wasn't there, but sometimes you have to be proud of being Jewish, not to be embarrassed about people laughing at you, whatever it is. In the Mishkan, what was the Mishkan? The Mishkan was a place of the Shekhinah. That was where the Shekhinah is everywhere. It's true. You can make the Shekhinah everywhere. The Shekhinah is everywhere in the world. You can talk to God in your car. You can talk to Him wherever you are. But there are certain places where there's more of a concentration in Shekhinah. In Eretz Yisrael, there's more Shekhinah. You feel it more in Yerushalayim. Kivrei Tzadikim. You guys are going to Kivrei Tzadikim. The Shekhinah is over there. Go to the Kotel HaMalavi. The Shekhinah is there. And the Beis Medrash. The Shekhinah is there. Something we have to be sensitive to feel it. You grow up in America, you don't know what the Shekhinah is. I remember my roommate who came to Israel with me, he was being interviewed. This is a true story. They asked him, the Rosh Hashiva asked him, "What's the Shekhinah?" You know what he said? He said, "The Shekhinah? I think that's what you, isn't that the sauce you put on falafel?" The Shekhinah. That's what he thought. He didn't know. He told me. Hey, that's what he thought it was. The Shekhinah is everywhere. We have to try to feel it, try to feel good about being Jews. I'll end off with two ideas. One is the pasuk in the Parsha in Vayakel. We spoke about Pekudei before, now Vayakel. It says in Parshas Vayakel, it says it's a pasuk, it says, HaNasiyim Heviu Avnei HaShalom. The Nasiyim, who were the Nasiyim? The heads of the Jewish people, they brought certain rocks that we use for some of the big day kavim. They brought Avnei Shalom. Says Rashi, quoting a statement of Chazal, why were they late in bringing? Why were they last to bring? They waited for everybody else to donate what was necessary, and they said, if anything's lacking, we'll fill the void, we'll fill the vacuum. And they brought. You look at the word Nasiyim, it's spelled without a yid in the Chumash. The word Nasiyim normally is spelled with a yid. Says Rashi, based on a ma'amar of Chazal, that it's sort of like a little bit of a warning or a punishment, that because they were lazy in bringing, they waited till everyone else brought, then they said, whatever's missing, we'll bring. Whatever's missing, we'll bring. They should have brought with everyone else. So Hashem took the yud out of the word Nasiyim. I saw an idea written by his name is Rav Liff, and maybe you heard of him, he wrote it from his firm, he has one in English on the Parsha. I think I saw it, someone told, I don't remember. It's not a coincidence that Hashem took the word Yud out of the word Nasiyim. The word Nasiyim, without a Yud, what does it spell? What's the Shoresh? Nosei, or Masa, to lift up. Hashem wanted to inform the Nasiyim that when you do mitzvahs, you don't do them because to look at the practical gain from them. The Nasiyim view bringing the money for the Mishkan, that there should be enough. And they said, as long as there's enough, why should we bring? Let's wait to see till the end. If there's not enough, we'll bring. Hashem wanted the Nasiyim to realize that the bringing of the materials for the Mishkan lifts up the Jewish people. You should want to be part of it. Not just to see, do I need to bring? Do I not need to bring? And therefore Hashem removed the Yud from the Nasiyim as a reminder to what they didn't realize, that the mitzvahs are in order to lift ourselves up. And wherever we go in the world, we have to let the mitzvahs lift ourselves up. The last thing is, we spoke about being proud as a Jew, to be happy as a Jew, not to be embarrassed. The Jews left Mitzrayim biyad ramah. They left Mitzrayim with a high hand. They left in daylight. They could have left earlier. There's an idea on Pesach. We do zechel lemikdash kehillel. What did Hillel do? What did he eat together? What did he say eat together? The matzah and the maror together, right? The korban Pesach. The matzah and the maror together. We don't hold like Hillel. We hold that the matzah and the maror are separate. But we do zechel lemikdash kehillel. We do it afterwards. We eat it together as well. What's the idea of eating the matzah and the maror together? We know the maror represents the bitter times, the bitterness. Whereas the matzah represents, what does matzah represent? The opposite, the freedom. When a person wants to appreciate freedom, it's not always easy. A lot of times we get used to the idea. We get used to all the good that we have. Oh, we have freedom. A person wins the lottery. You think he's going to be happy for the rest of his life? He'll be in the clouds, on the clouds the first day or two. After a while, he gets used to it. A week later, he'll be like the same person he was before. Maybe he'll be able to spend more money, but he's going to have the same difficulties, same challenges in life. To have freedom is beautiful, but a person could get used to it. And in order for us to appreciate the freedom, to appreciate the matzah, you have to always constantly look back and remember the bitter times, remember the maror. And that's why with the matzah, we put the maror together as well. That's the idea, the conceptual idea behind the pasuk that Hillel learns from, of eating the matzah and maror together, matzahs from yochlu, to put it together. If a person really wants to appreciate the good, you have to look back and put the bad with it. And therefore, you guys, when you guys go to Poland or America, take a look at the Gayim and see what they're doing. See the types of lives that they're living. Baruch Hashem for them, if it's good, that's their purpose, okay? We have to thank our Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're not one of them. We have real freedom to learn Torah. It's the biggest freedom that we could have. And I want every one of you with Shana Aleph to at least think about the possibility of coming back Shana Bet. You know, no one says you have to come back, but just be open to it. Think about it, because if you think you had a good year this year, you're going to have a much better year next year, Bezrat Hashem. Hashem should bless all of you. Okay, let's go over here. Yeah.